A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there were eggs, and they were made of chocolate. Happy belated Ostara, podcast 130.
Nom nom nom.
Welcome all to Staggering Stories
one
podcast,
and
one and all. Sorry. Well, Crumbly isn't here, so I'm not doing it entirely as a Crumbly-esque.
No, okay.
I do apologise. I'm still peeking chocolate out of my teeth.
I'm not Crumbly. I cannot do it justice.
And I've got to admit, I am glad you're not Crumbly.
Anyway, where was I? I was welcoming everyone to podcast 130. For me, Jean.
Hello, Adam.
And me, Keith. Just Keith. Because unfortunately, fake Keith cannot be with us because she's down with the ickies.
And Crumbly can't be with us because he's down with Jane. Yes, you have just the three of us for this podcast. I'm sure they'll survive. Well, we have the same usual boring stuff. Story, exciting stuff for you all, this podcast.
Very exciting. Woo-hoo. Sure.
I'm excited. I'm bouncing up and down.
So shall we start with the news? Will you pack that in?
Sorry.
You break his couch.
Sorry.
Shall we start with the news?
Start with the news.
Yeah.
Okay.
Doctor Who news.
Ooh.
Hugo Award nominations.
It's that time again.
Wasn't there a film that won some awards recently?
It is up. Hugo is actually up for Hugo, bizarrely, long form, but anyway.
Watch it, it's good, I recommend it.
Hugo as a thing for Doctor Who yet again.
Mm.
Yes, some nominations are in for this year's prestigious Hugo Awards. For science fiction and fantasy. And Doctor Who is well served in the best dramatic presentation short form category. Three episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman's The Doctor's Wife.
Yay!
Yep.
Tom McRae's The Girl Who Waited.
Yep.
And Stephen Moffat's A Good Man Goes to War.
Yep.
Against just two other contenders, namely Christopher J. Garcia and James Bacon's The Drink Tank's Hugo Acceptance Speech, presumably from last year, and Dan Harmon and Chris McKenna's community episode Remedial Chaos Theory.
Not seen either of them.
I'll have to track that one down.
Mm.
I've started watching Community. It's not bad. It has its moments.
Yeah, I've heard good things about it. Yeah. Not seen it, but let's just hope splitting the Who vote three ways doesn't prevent Doctor Who winning.
Doctor's wife.
Personally, I've got to admit, I want the Doctor's wife to win.
But I think it will.
I think it will be The Girl Who Waited, because that was fantastic.
I would vote for The Girl Who Waited myself.
I would vote for The Doctor's Wife.
I would have to vote for both. I think, because they're both fantastic episodes, I want The Doctor's Wife to win, simply because of the subject material.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be The Girl Who Waited, because it was simply a fantastic episode, and caused El Presidente to buy a toaster.
Indeed.
Yeah, it must be a good program. An emotional outburst
to crack that hard shell. Okay, next. Being Human, Alive! The Fades, Dead.
Dead.
Recently, there are unconfirmed rumours that BBC Three would only commission a new series season for one of its two recent genre series, namely Being Human and The Fades. If true, it can't have been a hard decision given the slightly lacklustre reception of The Fades.
Mm.
True or not, it has now been confirmed that we will get more Being Human, but not any more of the hoped-for trilogy of The Fades.
Mm.
Perhaps adding weight to the rumour is the fact that the BBC have only ordered 6 rather than 8 episodes of Being Human next year.
Budget cuts across the BBC.
Yeah. Scaling it back even if they're running with it.
I think this links back into the Doctor Who Confidential controversy at the latter part of last year.
Well, it's BBC Three cut Doctor Who Confidential because they want to do their own original programming.
Yeah.
And they've just cut their own original programming.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was all that about?
Yeah, yeah. I think, like I said, I think it's budget cuts just across the board, and that one was an excuse.
I was going to say, but surely Confidential is probably one of the cheaper things, because they haven't actually got to make the programme it's based on. It is literally
a
bloke or blokette with a camera.
Yeah,
it's a small team of three or four people, presumably following the crew around on select days, not every day even. Yeah. Who knows? It is worrying that they're cutting back on original programming, which is what they said they wanted to increase.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's just tied in with the general recession at the moment. The fact that the licence fee hasn't been bumped up at any point in time recently.
No, it's frozen, yes.
Yeah, and as I said, it's just general cutbacks.
Maybe. Is it particular thing against science fiction or fantasy programming on BBC Three?
They've never been particularly mad on it at the BBC, despite the fact that they have a history with it. Yeah,
brings in so much money for them.
Yeah. I mean, Doctor Who was the highest earner for the programme, even when it, or for the BBC, even when it wasn't actually being made, especially through the sales and everything.
Yeah. It certainly is with BBC worldwide now.
Yeah.
ITV wants a new sci-fi series, namely a reimagined Space 1999.
Oh, yes, I've heard this, yes, yes.
With still no word on more British Primeval, and no, it hasn't been, season 5 hasn't been screened on ITV yet, as far as I'm aware. And if it has, I missed it.
Me too.
ITV's genre eye is wandering into the shapely figure of the mid-1970s effort of Space 1999. But no doubt the skirts will be longer this day and age.
I don't know.
V-Reboot producer Jace Hall has been drafted in to rework the live-action Gerry Anderson series as Space 2099. It doesn't have quite the same ring about it.
Not really. Yeah. Doesn't trip off the tongue.
Of it, he says,
"What we're working on is a reimagining, not a retelling. So everything is on the table in terms of what we're able to consider. We're interested in creating some quality, and that takes time. There's no pressure or rush. Just a clear, universal desire on everyone's part to do this right and make it work, including ITV. Over the next few months, we'll be revealing more information."
I always kind of had a soft spot for Space 1999.
Yeah, I got to admit, I did like it. I've seen a couple of reworkings of the Eagles.
Oh, yeah.
They're basically the same. Yeah. They've just been tweaked.
Yeah.
What I do find interesting in this release and all the information that I've seen, the no evidence that they've gone back to Gerry Anderson.
No.
It's without his approval, his permission, or anything to do with it.
I was
going to
say, I would have thought they'd have had to have got his approval and permission because of the copyright.
I think ITV own it lock, stock and barrel.
Yeah. Oh, right, so he's got no say in it.
As I said, there's been two lines of thought I've heard from this. One, they're going to be doing a Star Trek remastering, i.e. all new graphics, special effects, or
they
whatever.
They did rescan it all into high def for a Blu-ray release a couple of years back.
Or it's going to be, starting from scratch, a brand new production.
It is a brand new production.
This is the two.
They may do both.
Yeah.
We'll see. I can't see why they'd need to do much in the way of work on the special effects.
Yeah.
Because the model work was very, very good.
It was a high standard. I think, actually, if I remember rightly, the beginning plans of Star Wars, George Lucas went to Anderson's.
Yeah.
For ideas. Advice on model
work. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, well, he was a master. Yeah.
And I think some of the people who worked on Space 99 also worked on the first Star Wars.
Wouldn't be surprised, yeah. So we'll see. There were some, obviously, some logical plot issues they might have to resolve in the remastered version. The whole thing about the moon being blown over. Okay, but then visiting a different planet each week.
Yeah.
Speeded that thing going out.
I think it was... They kept on falling into space warps and wormholes, if memory served correct.
Yes.
They would have to come up with some pseudo-scientific rationale
and
for it.
I think there was once or twice where the alien planets actually captured the moon and dragged it towards them.
Yeah. You do get rogue planets and stuff, but the time it would take to get from one solar system to the other is...
Millennia rather than centuries.
Millions and millions of years. Yeah. But anyway.
Any mode up
that's their problem, not ours. Mass Effect 3.
Oh.
Extended cut.
I would have to say when fake Keith isn't sort of blowing various fluids out of various nostrils.
Yeah.
As she is at the moment. She's been up, right. She's been up playing Mass Effect 3, which she got for her birthday.
Oh, good. Right. Yes, yes. I finished it myself. Yes. But after a large and well-publicised backlash against the ending of the Mass Effect sci-fi trilogy of games, its developer, BioWare, have announced that they'll be releasing an extended cut of the final game.
Mm.
Surprising many, this will be made available as free DLC, downloadable content, and it will expand upon the controversial ending, the extra cinematics and epilogue scenes in an attempt to provide
more closure with even more content and clarity, and to supply an ending that will feel more personalised for each player.
BioWare co-founder Ray Mazika, maybe, added,
"Since launch, we've had time to listen to feedback from our more passionate fans, and we are responding with the Mass Effect 3 Extended Cut. We think we have struck a good balance in delivering the answers the players are looking for, while maintaining team artistic vision for the end of story arc into Mass Effect Universe." And I'm about to get lynched for that.
Who would lynch you? Where's that meant to be from?
From Geordie to Scottish.
No idea. This is my role-playing voice. This is the characters that I used to do.
What alien world did that person live on?
Oh, dear.
But, yeah. That's good news. I must admit, I was a little disappointed with the ending of Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, so. I haven't played it myself yet, because I'm waiting for Fate Keith to get them all the way through it. But okay. She's enjoying it so far.
It's a good game, but the ending does, well, it doesn't take much regard to everything you've done up to that point, sadly. But
I'll pass on this conversation, seems though I haven't even played Angry Birds in Space yet.
If you ever get the chance, I would recommend the Mass Effect series.
They're very good, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a trilogy of three stories, or three games that make up one story.
All right.
And you get to bonk people.
What?
Yeah. Actually, if I remember rightly, there was questions asked in the House of Congress about the sexual content
Really?
Of Mass Effect 2.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
Tusk.
I don't actually see anything, really.
No, it's all very delicately and gracefully done on cut effects and whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Any more news?
I don't know. Really.
Any addendums?
I have one addendum.
Ooh.
My addendum is the fact that the BBC are currently extremely upset with Virgin Media.
Oh, what's that?
I've seen this trailer.
About their trailer coverage, their advertisement coverage, using the actor David Tennant to promote the Virgin Media.
Virgin Tebow service.
Virgin Tebow
service. David Tennant, what's he done?
He has done an advert, and I think in the demonstration he says you can call up all content by a certain actor. For example, David Tennant presses the button and a few images, well, I don't think images, it's logos.
It's like logos, and it says Casanova, Doctor Who. It just gives a list of all the stuff he's been in.
And
that's not what they're annoyed about.
And in the background, you have the Virgin...
Richard Branson.
Virgin manager, Richard Branson, tinkering with, I don't know, a lift, a box, a shower cubicle, which has the words time machine above it,
right.
To which he gets trapped inside and then reduces him back to his 1970s persona?
Yeah, when he'd just done Tubular Bells.
Yeah, back to the velvet coat and whatever. And the BBC claims that that Virgin Media is using one of their products to advertise a third party.
Now, whether it's the Doctor Who bit, or whether it's I'm waving inverted commas in the air here. Time machine.
Well, they don't own the copyright to time machine.
It doesn't. It's not blue.
No.
It doesn't disappear. It doesn't go vault, vault, vault.
No.
It's simply he goes in. There's lots of smoke, and Richard Branson comes out as younger Richard Branson, which was kind of being done by a lot of other people. And give his dues, David Tennant's done it in his voice rather than his doctor's voice. So Scottish
David Tennant.
Not... But even if he uses Doctor Who voice, they don't have any copyright over that.
Well, as I said, they are miffed and are in talks with Virgin Media
to
try
about,
to get
really.
The advert pulled.
watch it. It's on YouTube.
It's out there in the world on YouTube at the moment.
So. I can't quite see the BBC can have any hope of winning any litigation on that one.
Well, I think, I have to agree with you, but I think Virgin might pull it anyway, just for the controversy, the discussion, the fact that it's been pointed out.
Maybe.
So, if you do get the chance, watch it while it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. If they're talking about the logo...
No, it just says Doctor Who.
The
logo briefly appears on screen alongside Casanova logo...
Blackpool
logo...
Yeah.
The stuff he was in. If you brought him up on the screen, that's what you'd see.
It appears as it would appear on the screen if you were searching for it at home, i.e. the various logos from the various shows.
Yeah, it's the only thing I can think they'd have any problem with, but I can't see why they would.
I think it's more the Time Machine and David Tennant that they have a problem with.
David Tennant got off to do another Time Machine programme.
It's all those things in conjunction that have upset the BBC. As I said, I don't think it's any one thing.
You know how much they love the programme and how much they love their actors, the BBC, and they don't want anyone to be
It's going for the fact that they're using one of their products to advertise a third party, i.e. Virgin.
Mm. Oh, well, enough of this already.
More than enough of this.
Anything else?
I think there was a load of deaths not so long ago, but I don't think any of them were Who.
Cut a finger in there. Tom Baker?
No. So, following the news and reviews, we're going to have a little look back into our past of Doctor Who.
Back in the mists of time.
But before we move forward to that illustrious historical event... I have a five-word for you.
Oh, things in five words.
Things in five words.
And this one is related to Doctor Who.
Ooh.
And as Keith had gone to the Leisure Hives and seen Ian Marta and Nick Courtney do a variation on this, he should get it.
Back in the day.
Nobody else has any chance, though.
Yeah. That's put me in a spot.
Okay, ready? Located north... Frozen water container.
Okay.
I know exactly. It's the crossword.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on then, elucidate.
Go on, have a clue. Located north.
Have a go.
Frozen water container.
It's a shame that we haven't got more here. Can you get it out there?
Located north.
Yes. They're going to be shouting at this.
Yes.
North Pole?
Yep.
What's frozen water called?
Ice.
What's a container?
Cup.
No, just a general container. You put something in a...
box.
Right, so put those words together.
North?
No.
What's north?
What's north?
Oh, pole.
Yeah. Yes.
Right.
What do
ice.
You yep.
Box. I still don't get it. Pole, ice, box.
Police box. They are sitting there on the stage doing the quiz. You've got Harry Sullivan.
When you put the words together...
There's an extra E in that police box.
But the gag was, they're sitting there on the stage meeting at a park bench. You have Harry Sullivan and the Brigadier. They don't necessarily recognise each other because it's been a couple of years.
Right.
And you've got Harry Sullivan sitting there doing
crossword.
A crossword. And he's going, located north, frozen water, box.
Container.
Oh, container. Oh, yeah. Pole ice box. In the... Where?
Okay.
Don't do that.
Anyway, back to the real world.
Yes. Yeah.
We've been dipping our toes into an entire season in one afternoon.
Oh, yes. Well, it's more than an entire season. It's an era. A whole era.
A whole era of Doctor Who. We watched the movie.
Yeah.
TV movie.
The McGann TV movie. Or has it become known for a little while, the McGann movie with the Pertwee logo. Hello,
Head of Pertwee!
So... We have actually spoken about this before, back in, I think, like, episode 12.
Yeah, but all but all respect, myself and Auntie Jean here wasn't there for this discussion.
Yeah, and I can't remember anything about it, so...
perhaps we can bring... go back, listen to the original, then come back here and you can compare our vote notes and views.
Yes,
and
see how much I've forgotten.
Well, I have to admit, at the time, I quite enjoyed the film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too, but there were things that kind of like... and
grated?
Well, not so much grated, because I accepted it was for an American market as much as it was the English market.
More so, I would say.
But there are things that happened in it then that now we don't think of. Like the first kiss where you're sitting there going, what?
Yes.
At the TV.
Doing a Tennant impersonation.
I never thought it was that big a deal.
Yes, but the doctor hadn't kissed any... I mean, what isn't that she kissed
Adric?
Him, he kissed her.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He wasn't kissed. He was the kisser rather than the kissy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's stuff for the First Doctor and Susan, but...
She's his daughter's granddaughter. He's allowed to kiss her.
You wouldn't be kissing the same way, would it?
Well, I don't know.
There were some bits of it I didn't quite... Why was the Master put on trial on Skaro?
Yeah. There's something in the book about this, I believe.
You can, as I say, you can rationalise that now with the advent of the Time War and the battle with the Daleks.
But the Time War hadn't obviously happened at that point, because he could still see Gallifrey at the end of it.
Yeah. Well, it depends on your point of view. Some say that Time War started at the Genesis of the Daleks.
Daleks, yeah.
And it was an ongoing thing in the background.
Well, as I say, you can justify it by the fact that the Daleks were putting him on trial. So it's a show trial.
Hang on, the Daleks were putting him on trial, not just exterminating.
Exactly, that's the whole point. The Daleks were putting him on trial. Daleks wouldn't do that. Daleks would exterminate.
It does seem strange. It's as if they're playing for an audience.
Exactly.
A galactic audience.
You get the
idea. Up on the Time Lords.
Yeah, you get the idea of the fact that this is a show trial. Certainly these days, this can be explained as a show trial.
Yeah.
This was a deliberate affront to the Time Lords.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it was only the Master that they could get their hands on, but...
Maybe, and they would try to frighten the universe if we can...
Yeah, do this to a Time Lord.
Do this to a Time Lord, then
what
none of you are safe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And we'll gloss over the Dalek voices.
I
still can't understand. They've been given full rights to the BBC archives and access. Yeah. Why couldn't they get the voices right?
But I don't know. It's almost a shame they haven't got Nick Briggs in to redo them. Like they have done with... which one was it?
Day.
Day of Darkness,
you're right. That's the next updated release. They'll get Nick Briggs in and do the voices.
They might try. I don't know if they have the ability to do it, because it...
Well, it depends on the rights.
And it depends on what form they have the original... The quality of the picture is very poor.
Yes.
Which implies they've not gone back to the original film. I assume it's shot in film. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it will. Actually, I'm not sure. It might have been filmed on digital.
I don't know. But it's very poor, ropey copy. Because it always was, because it's converted from NTSC.
Yeah.
Mm. It does look bad. You'd kind of hope they would have gone back and remastered it properly, as they would have done with the UK release like they did with Spirit from Space, for example.
Yeah.
So maybe they haven't got the ability to separate out the different tracks.
Could be that. Because, as you said, they don't have the original copy. That's
maybe
probably
not.
Probably rotting away in Fox's vault somewhere.
Maybe.
Although it was set in America, and a lot of the cast were American, or supposed to be American in it.
Yeah, okay.
They did seem to try to have the English feel to it. I mean, you had a few little bits, like it landed, TARDIS landing in front of the London sign, and the kid obviously figured he was English, so called him John Smith instead of John Doe, which would have been the Americanized version. And it wasn't too many Star Spangled Banners. One thing I did notice for America, there weren't any flags flying.
No.
You know, and stuff like that. Now, okay, we know it wasn't filmed in America, it was filmed in Canada.
Going on to that, there's a couple of scene setters. You get shots of San Francisco Bridge and whatever, just to establish where they are.
But it wasn't overly Americanized. And at the time, I was quite pleased with that. I mean, there was Americanness in it, but you couldn't help that. It was set in America. It's like, you set their stuff now, and you're still in the diner in the recent one. got in there and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there were some other little bits I did love about it. I did like, as time was breaking down, him walking through the glass. Mm-hmm. That apparently, and I remember at the time, narked a load of fans. It's sort of like, this is beyond what the Doctor can do. And, you know, it's making him more than just a Time Lord. And I started thinking, well, actually,
the point, haven't they?
For the whole of the last season of Sylvester McCoy, there'd been this build-up so that he was more than just a Time Lord.
But anybody could have walked through that glass.
That was the point. If you will be able to see the differences, anyone could walk through. But yeah, it called right. It was even more than the kiss.
Really?
Is.
Yeah. I don't know. The whole feel is very different.
Yeah.
It does feel like an American drama.
Yeah.
It does.
I personally do remember being very disappointed first time round, because it was billed as this great forces of good and evil.
Oh, yeah.
You know, clashing and fun. But it came across more of a schoolyard spat rather than a massive battle.
Yeah, I think there were some plot issues.
And I remember at the time, it always had the feeling more of being a pilot for a series than a standalone movie. Now, I think the idea was it was a pilot for a series.
It was. I've read the book by...
Gary Russell.
By Russell T. Davis and... not Russell T. Davis, Russell... Gary Russell.
Gary Russell.
Yeah. I'll get it right in a minute. Gary Russell and Jeffrey Sachs.
Oh, the making of.
The making of.
Not the novel.
No, not the novel. Regenerations.
Oh, okay, I'm not sure.
And yes, it was... It was intended as a backdoor pilot.
Mm.
So, yes, it was meant to be a self-contained movie.
Story, yeah.
But depending on the ratings, they were trying to launch a TV series off of it.
Yeah, but they didn't quite do well enough in America.
No.
It was up against something... Was it a
the
big
heart
football
attack
match
episode of Roseanne.
Oh, yeah. Right, yes. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But... I don't know. It was a very strange way to start a new series.
Yes.
It was, 22 minutes, I think, before we actually saw McGann.
Yeah. Before we saw the new Doctor.
It's a very long time.
I mean, no disrespect, it was lovely to see Sylvester again.
And
apparently when he got shot, people kept on saying that they actually missed and he is still the Doctor.
Yeah.
And that was people in the production office rather than... anyone else. They wanted Sylvester to continue.
Okay.
I think there was an element, though, that they had to have Sylvester, or they had to have something that told people, especially in America, that this guy had regenerated, you know, because the Doctor was known to some people, but he wasn't on the greater consciousness, not in the way he is now.
No.
He only was shown on BBC America and some PBS stations.
There was no BBC America back then, it was just PBS, I think.
Yeah. And so that you needed to explain the fact that alien regeneration, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, do you need to do that in the first 20 minutes?
This is what I think, this is one of the problems I think it had. If you compare that to the reboot from On Rose...
RTD, yeah.
He just hit the ground running.
And the original series.
Literally. Mm.
When you saw that, when you see the Eighth Doctor film, I think it's assumed that you already have a background knowledge.
Yeah.
Because you have the police box flying through space, you have this man in this great, beautifully cathedralised console room.
Mm.
Mm.
Whereas Unearthly Child and Rose introduce the elements separately.
Yeah.
Introduce you to one concept before introducing you to the TARDIS and or introducing you to the interior.
Crucially, they did it from the companion's point of view.
Yeah.
Whereas this one,
it literally assumes that you already know. And I think that was one of the major downfalls of why it didn't go to series.
It was done by a big fan. As Rose and all that was. But... I don't know if RTD would have done it differently if he hadn't seen the TV movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely think he did it the right way with Rose.
Oh, God,
He learnt from the mistakes of the TV movie.
I know Rose is different, but it takes as its blueprint Unearthly Child.
Yeah.
It introduces each element separately rather than... all at once.
You don't immediately see the inside of the TARDIS. No. You see it just sitting there on the corner of the road.
You don't even see it take... Yeah, you see it... First you see it in the corner of the road.
Yeah.
Then you see it in the corner of the background. And when she looks back, it's gone.
Yeah.
So it sort of introduces it slowly.
Yes.
I did like the console room in this one. And it's very reminiscent of Tennant's console room. Tennant's one is smaller, but it's got that same kind of organic look and colours.
Maybe
it introduced the rotor and going all the way up to the
ceiling. The rotor as well, with two lots of spikes.
That is how the console, the rotor, has been portrayed ever since.
It is, yeah.
And there was other things that I was wondering if they came over to the new series. At the end, when Lee and Grace have been killed, just before the Eye of Harmony dies, it kind of lets their spirit out and it comes over them as a golden glow. Very similar to the glow that basically took over Rose and then that the Doctors have regenerated with ever since.
I'm
wondering if that was something they just picked up and decided
it may have been a tip of the hat. May have been the tip of the hat.
Right. Just like a golden shower, I expect.
We know where your mind's gone.
So how did Lee get into the TARDIS with the key, as it's an isomorphic lock? And how did the Master get in before Lee if he didn't have a key?
If he didn't have anything.
And the TARDIS doesn't like the Master and wouldn't let him in, which is why the Master needed Lee.
Maybe the Master found the spare key.
And then put it back
in. Put it back in,
why not? You've got the door open, you can easily reach out and put it back.
Okay. Yeah, there were a few faults. I loved... Yeah. This is probably a moot point now, considering they've got an established set. But I loved the interior of the TARDIS. But at the time, I couldn't see how they could continue that on at that same size and shape.
Oh, they couldn't.
Used to the previous series where the TARDIS... interior was a breakdown set.
Yeah.
They broke down every week.
Put it up one night and use it the next day and then put it back down.
Yeah.
All the walls have moved and everything.
Yeah.
Different in America because they have standing sets. Yeah. They have done forever.
Well, we have the standing console set.
We have two, in fact, at the moment.
Yeah.
We've got one in Upper Boat still and they're building a new one in the new studios. I don't know how much it's going to change. Yes. Probably not much. But...
I think that was one of the things that hit you, was the it to give you a size of the TARDIS, which you had been constrained in the TV series, even the console room. By the time you had three assistants and a doctor in there, if you added a Dalek, it got a bit cramped.
Yeah. Well, case in point, mostly sticks out in my mind, is Awakening.
Mm.
Where they have all about 9 or 10 people in the TARDIS at one point in time.
Really?
You can't move.
Yeah. No, that was certainly nice. I'm not entirely sure about how it all looked quite so rustic.
Maybe.
All these leaves everywhere. Stuff. A bit weird, but...
Yeah, the bats that must obviously not suffer from starvation in the belfry, and the trees that are deciduous, even though I didn't see a tree once in the TARDIS.
No. Lots of dark leaves. Well, there was the original console room that had lots of vines in from Logopolis. So.
That's true.
Yeah. They weren't oak leaves.
You don't believe me, do you?
No.
It could all be artificial. Dock transfer computations or whatever.
Yes. It's part of the look.
Yeah.
I thought the speed of it was a lot faster. I know it doesn't look it now.
Doesn't feel it now.
But it was a lot faster than the original series. And it was the first time we were really introduced to one story in that 90-minute kind of format.
Yeah.
But that's now the norm. And it is weird feeling watching it now, when we've got used to these faster-paced stories, to how it was watching it then.
Mm.
When... That was a new format to some extent.
Yeah. I suppose so, yeah. But it does feel quite slow. There's just not enough plots there, I don't think, to drag out for 90 minutes as you do it today. Lots of running around, in good old Doctor Who tradition, I suppose. Yeah. But
well, as I said, that was something struck me then and struck me now, is the chase scene on the motorbike.
Yeah.
Very fast, very dramatic, very... halfway pointless, because the Master drives off halfway through the chase to take a shortcut, but they're still getting dramatic and
you know, all this for one little bit of machinery. I know we've had that sort of thing before with the Daleks and you know, the first Dalek story, but it seemed like, can the Doctor really not synthesize whatever that little thing is
that resulted in the creator of the clock getting drunk on whiskies in about five minutes?
We're
assuming it's whiskey.
He was slightly obsessed, the clock creator, wasn't he? What a sad, poor little life he must lead. Is that his life's work, his crowning achievement, and he's just pulled.
Yes.
One wonders if after the party he was carted off by the gentleman in white coat with back-to-front shirts.
Yeah. I say Robert should have been, but...
Master.
We have to address the Master. Like I say, at the time... I think, to begin with, he was quite good.
When he was Bruce, you mean?
As Bruce. All up until the point when we first see him as the master in the hospital, where he pulls off the fingernail.
Oh, that bit I hated then, and I hate it now.
Up to that point, I think he was acting. He was acting. He then, his agent told him that his paycheck had been cashed, and he stopped acting.
Yeah.
He just said the lines.
Well, overacting.
Yeah. Didn't bother. Couldn't be bothered anymore.
I wouldn't say it's a homage to the Terminator.
Yeah.
Dreads for the occasion.
Now, I liked the Gawald type serpent.
Oh, yes, the CGI serpent, which is the essence.
Yeah. And the little hint about, do you always regenerate as human? Because he has snake eyes and that kind of stuff. I think that was trying to be a bit too clever for its own good. I think Time Lords are humanoid, or humans are Time Lordoid.
So in the book version, it was the first of the BBC books.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Which is, I think, the Eight Doctors. It's the Terence Dix one.
How does he smell?
That man has no neck. How does he smell? God knows. But they did write in an explanation, retroactively fixing the snake isn't a Time Lord facet. He got that from somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Probably from the Gawald.
Probably, yeah.
Another attempt to cheat death.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, he's fond of stealing other races' ideas, so there's every possibility that he has managed to use some kind of parasitical life form.
Yeah.
And get his essence into it.
As it were.
But how do they get hold of the Doctor's essence? Sorry, the Master's essence. Sorry, for the new Master.
Gave him a naughty mag.
Yeah, he's in the TARDIS system somewhere.
Giving the poor girl indigestion.
Yeah, giving her indigestion.
Well, that was meant to be the Eye of Harmony, which is the black coal.
Yeah.
So presumably all TARDISes have a link to it.
That is hinted at in Three Doctors.
Oh, okay.
Because you're not actually told... The Eye of Harmony doesn't enter it until Deadly Assassin.
Yeah.
But you are told that the energy drain through the black hole is now affecting the ability to time travel and all the TARDISes.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's implied that they're somehow linked there.
Yeah.
So it isn't... it's wishy-washy and to want of a better term, fan-wank, but...
So, in effect, the Master has been spaghettified over the edge, venturising this black hole, and presumably the Time Lords being stellar engineers could retrieve him in some fashion.
Drag the essence back, or the coding. Yeah. Also, you've got to remember, they also have via data extract of all the Time Lords.
Yeah.
So
it could be effectively a clone.
Could be, yeah.
Taken out of the time stream before those events happened,
whatever.
I did wonder at parts if he was channeling Anthony Ainley.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean by when he's acting. Ah, the Asian child. That is an Anthony.
That is an Ainley line.
And that is to me when he stops acting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad we didn't keep him as the master. Yeah, I have to say, but I would love to have seen Paul McGann do some of the Doctor. I think he would have actually been quite good as the Doctor.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Big Finish, and I followed Big Finish, and I've got to admit, thanks to BBC books, I didn't like the Eighth Doctor. Because after this, they span off in a whole series of books, and to my mind, it was a knee-jerk reaction to the Seventh Doctor, the fact that he was always in charge and the chess player.
Yeah.
They made the Eighth Doctor the victim. That is not my Doctor. He is not a victim.
No.
People might get the better of him occasionally, but he's always in charge. So I didn't really like the Eighth Doctor portrayal. But that is not down to McGann. That is down to what they did in the books.
Mm.
Big Finish have now taken up the Eighth Doctor baton because they're not allowed to go any further than Doctor Eight. And they've run with it. They have been fantastic. They have been sublime and beautiful stories.
If they were going to make a movie and they wanted to keep it in context without buggering up its own timeline... Paul McGann would agree, you could always make the movie with the Eighth Doctor.
Yeah, could do.
Because there is a whole period between the end of that story where he regenerates and the Time Wars that we've never been party to.
They've made room for untelevised stories, definitely in the new series, because we found out that Doctor 11 has had 200 untelevised years.
Yeah. Mm.
Not so that doesn't matter about the rest. I mean, we've got a period where the 10th Doctor ran off the rails between Water of Mars and End of Time.
Yeah.
And then there's all the other periods.
You got the tricky bit there when you do see them afterwards and they haven't aged.
Yeah.
Whereas if they come back 10 years, 15 years later to do a film, they would clearly have aged. Whereas Paul McGann doesn't matter. We didn't see him at the end.
No, yeah. So we don't know how long he's lasted.
Yeah.
So I mean, that'd be their option if they could do, you know, if you agreed.
Well, Moffat is saying that if they did do a film, then it would be the current TV Doctor.
Yeah.
And I think McGann has, at the time of his casting, he was very unsure.
Yeah.
Because the fan reaction, he was a little bit...
Yeah.
I'm not sure... It's because not because there was a negative fan reaction. I think it's the general fan reaction. He was unused to being under the spotlight.
Because With Man and I was the most famous... He is a cult status around With Man and I, but it's a different kind of cult status.
But he has gone on the record as saying if the phone rings for the 50th anniversary, he will quite happily be there.
That would be nice.
That would be good.
Yeah,
I did think the bit of him in the shroud was a bit Westdale and I have to admit. Yeah, he finds the only bit of the hospital that looks like a nuclear war has broken out.
Dead flowers, teddy bears thrown in the corner.
Glass, broken mirrors everywhere, and it's sort of like, you know, this very strategically placed lower shroud.
As we have faced the controversial bit of the Eric Roberts Master, I think we should also examine the half-human aspect. I think we should.
I know
the groan.
It's been poo-pooed by New Who, hasn't it? Yeah. Effectively, jokingly, they've dismissed it.
I know there is certainly an obsession, or there seems to be an obsession with American sci-fi to have a half-human
character
for us to identify with.
There's been rumours for eons before the film about the potentiality of the Doctor's mother being human, and that's why he had such a strong inkling for Earth, etc., etc. That one's been muted in fan fiction and what have you since knows when.
I really don't think he necessarily needs to have an overt or a reason to be obsessed with human culture. I mean, the Terrorfiles pointed it out. It's a hobby. It's something, because it's like stamp collecting or butterfly
watching. His granddaughter lives here, and her descendants will be living here.
She hasn't, if she can, haven't he?
Yeah.
According to Big Finish, she does, but...
I know it's not necessarily canon, but there was a wonderful line in one of the IDW comics. It's forgotten. Basically, they do a small story from each Doctor in the 10th Doctor story, remembering things because he's forgotten his memory. But there's a beautiful line from the 8th Doctor where he turns around to someone and says, "How can we get out of it? How can you convince the guard that who'll let us go?" "Oh, don't worry. With a half-broken chameleon circuit and a twinkle in my eye, I convinced my mortal enemy I was half-human once."
Yeah.
So.
Now, I think it's one of those ones like a certain Time Lord friend being female and the Doctor having X amount of regenerations in Sarah Jane Smith. I think they are throwaway lines that are best to be forgotten.
Well, as I said, the only aspect of it is the Master saying is half human, but the Doctor says it as a glib retort. So I'm quite comfortable. I can quite comfortably ignore it.
How do we know it isn't a case of that all Time Lords are predominantly half human? That's where they, because Ace was going to become a Time Lady,
and
it turns out that the Master is actually an alien. Yeah, because River would be human.
Yeah, River's human with Time Lord DNA. So,
true, yes, yeah.
And that's not because of any genetic shift, it's because she was conceived in the TARDIS.
She's human by birth, Time Lord by accident of conception.
Yeah. I'm sure it was an accident. Anyway.
But I enjoyed the movie. I can watch it and I can watch it again. It's not cringeable. There are elements of the acting that are cringeable, but it's, as they would say, it's a fun romp.
It's a fun romp. I think certainly as a regeneration story, it's probably forgettable. It doesn't come up with some of the best ones, but it's not as bad as some of the others.
No, it could have been a lot worse. At least they kept the central They kept everything, basically. Yeah, they kept the police officers, they kept the dematerialization sounds, everything like that.
Most of the sound effects, yeah.
Which, if they changed any of that, they would have made New Who tricky.
Yeah, they didn't drift too far from the core principles that make it Doctor. Yeah. I mean, even to the fact that he picked up the gun and then he's going to shoot himself.
Yeah, turns it on himself.
Though he does cover the cop with it.
Oh, yeah. Only casually, and he's not looking.
No, true.
Because he's involved in an argument with someone else.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, on the whole, it really was a missed opportunity, both in kicking, well, really, for McGann, kicking off the Eighth Doctor stories.
It was. It's a shame it didn't go further.
Yeah.
But it's very much a relief it didn't damage anything.
Yeah. Concerning, again, back to the regeneration book of what things that could have been.
There's some crazy stuff there about was some his very, father. And
I think it's one of the aspects of that, because the reason why he left Gallifrey was to look for his father, which I don't think would have worked.
No.
But it did survive as a line, lying back in the warm Gallifreyan night with my father watching the meteors.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I always kind of thought he was a villain on the run, to be honest, which is why he nicked the TARDIS.
Certainly.
I always got the feeling he wasn't a bad guy, as in he'd done anything really, really bad, but I always just got that feeling in the back of my mind for some reason. He was that slight degree of anarchist, and it was like, nick this police box or end up in the equivalent of Time Lord prison.
There has been mentions, I think mostly Deadly Assassin, there was some form of scandal, and there was reasons for him leaving at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's about it.
Best we never know. Really.
A Time Lord equivalent of Robin Hood.
Yeah.
I was thinking more Edith Keeler myself.
Then I have another thing in five words for you.
Ooh. Oh, right, yes.
Some more things in five words.
This will only be got by Terry Pratchett readers.
Ah.
Deadly fluffy waitresses incessantly talk.
Deadly fluffy waitresses?
Incessantly talk.
I have no idea.
I do consider myself a Pratchett fan, but...
Someone's pets.
No, that's...
Death's bunny rabbits.
Oh.
For anyone that doesn't get it, fluffy waitresses, bunny girls.
Yeah.
Ah.
Incessantly talk rabbits.
Yeah.
Very clever.
Death keeps rabbits. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Hairy Growler follows his man. Hairy Growler follows his man.
Hound of the Baskervilles?
No.
Oh, okay.
Bear. Bear something? Give us a clue. What's it from?
It's
Doctor Who, or...?
It's not Doctor Who. It's a film series.
Film series.
Silas Black.
Right, nicely. I can see where you're thinking of that, but no, follows...
Okay.
Follows his man.
No!
Give up?
Yeah.
Chewbacca.
Ooh.
All right, an easier one.
Okay.
The easy one. Nudie companion loves a Dalek.
I wonder who that could be. Are we looking for the character's name or the actress's name?
Well, I suppose either.
Couldn't be Katie Manning.
It could be.
Oh dear.
I have one last one.
One last one.
Oh, right, we'll do it now then. This is a character from a film.
Mm-hmm.
Biblically before John, atmospheric perambulation.
Before John, I don't know my Bible at all. What's before John? Is it Jack?
No.
Bernard.
Paul, isn't it? Biblically before John. Dave?
No.
Okay.
Desmond, is it?
Try the atmospheric perambulation and that'll give you the first one.
Walking in the air.
That's the name of someone. A character's name.
A character's name.
Luke Skywalker.
Yes!
Ah.
Matthew, Mark, Luke and John.
Ah, okay.
Atmospheric perambulations. Gosh, truth.
I'm going to go home now.
Oh, dear. With that mindlessness.
My head hurts.
We're going to go and have a talk about some other mindlessness.
All right.
Yes.
As we've talked about the end of time with Doctor Who, we'll go back to the beginning of time with Big Bang!
Oh. Mad science, history, unraveling the mystery that all started.
with the Big Bang.
So we've been watching TV.
Yes.
DVDs, yeah.
DVDs. We've been watching
situation comedy.
But it's an American situation comedy. Actually, it's a very, very well thought out. The Big Bang Theory.
Slightly outside our usual parameter because there is no sci-fi attached to it. Per se.
I was going to say, it's littered with it.
No, it's littered with references. It's not a sci-fi show.
Yes.
And not as such. Yeah. No, maybe not.
Yeah. Will Wheaton, Leonard Nimoy.
I've only seen the season one so far. None of them turn up in it.
I haven't seen season one, and I can't say as I've seen all of it, but I dip in and out of it, and I love it.
Okay.
Well, I have some useless facts for you.
Go on, then. Start us off.
I'm quite sure that everyone out there knows about it, but what is it?
Well, Big Bang Theory. You have two male flatmates, Sheldon and Leonard, who are both astrophysicists, geniuses basically. They have two genius-type friends, Raj and Howard. And it's about... Sheldon. Does Sheldon remind you of anyone, Pete?
There are some aspects of a couple of them that remind me of a couple of people I know.
Sheldon Cooper is... he controls his emotions to the point that a Vulcan would are positively enthusiastic. He has no sense of irony. It's actually quite amusing series, the way they interact.
And it's basically they interact with Penny, the girl who lives across the hall. Penny is our link into their world. She's normal, completely and utterly normal in every way.
She's a waitress, she's blonde.
Attractive.
Ish. Clearly bleached, but
Some interesting bits here, though, for reference.
Yep, okay.
Sheldon in the series is Sheldon Lee Cooper, who is named after probably the most second well-known physicist in the world, Sheldon Lee Glashaw. He's named after... Yes, we wouldn't have heard of him, but famous physicists have heard. Physicist-type people have heard of him.
Yes.
I've heard of some physicists in my time.
No, apparently he's really, really famous.
Okay.
And Amy Farrah Foster... who is Sheldon's girlfriend.
I think we could loosely call that,
It isn't season one again.
This is season four.
This is season four. Right. They've signed Sheldon up for a dating service, and they find a match, and Sheldon goes along only to disprove them, and they meet the female version of Sheldon.
All right.
Who has only gone on the dating service because she persuaded her mum to leave alone if she went on a date once a year.
Yeah. Right.
And that's it. The actress that plays Amy Fowler apparently has a PhD in neuroscience in real life. Plays a PhD neuroscientist in this.
The actress played Blossom in the TV series.
She did.
Called Blossom.
Right, okay.
That was late 90s, early noughties.
And there was a reference to that in an earlier episode.
All right.
But it's got a lot of crossovers to stuff like Roseanne. Leonard played Darlene's boyfriend in Roseanne. Darlene is the actress that plays his girlfriend an earlier series.
What's her name? In the first series.
The one who loves to go paintballing.
Yeah.
Leslie.
She was in a couple episodes, yes.
Yeah. And also, Penny spends the entire season four behind bars or sitting at tables.
Was she...
pregnant, huh?
No. The actress is a big keep fit fanatic. She'd broken her leg. And it was in a cast.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yes.
Didn't know that.
So she's being fit.
The what I like about it, like I said, with this show, I can spot people I know.
Oh, yes.
I can. I got to admit, if you factored in the intelligence, I would be one of the people in this programme. I'm just not as intelligent as these people.
Now, would you be Raj, who can only speak to women when he's drunk? It's drunk alcohol.
Yeah.
Does that continue on?
It continues. Yeah. There's a point where an FBI agent comes to talk to him.
Played by Eliza Dushku.
Oh, right, yeah.
And
I think she'd scare anybody.
Being female, he comes across as sort of like, and there's a sherry trifle behind her, and he's gulping down sherry trifle so he can actually answer her questions.
Right.
But as I said, various sci-fi geekdom does creep into it. They got a toaster that makes Cylon toast.
Okay.
So it wears it toast, it imprints, burns in a face of a Cylon onto the bread.
Right.
Will Wheaton, Sheldon's arch enemy.
Yeah, Sheldon's nemesis, Will Wheaton, turns up in about 3 or 4 episodes.
Okay.
There's a couple of homages. They all go to a screening of Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, which has an extra couple of 20 seconds in it.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the course of the program, or of course of the episode, they get banned from actually seeing it, because the theatre is too full.
Mm-hmm.
So they go in and steal the film. So they're running away from the theatre with all the theatre goers running after them to the Indiana Jones music.
All right, okay.
And on that one, they even brought up the submarine controversy.
Yeah.
Which is, you might not, but apparently amongst Indiana fans, there's this big controversy in the Indiana Jones
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
How he gets from the outside of the submarine to the inside
to
perfectly
the
dry.
Oh, okay.
And without ever flooding the boat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I think there's the part that cemented it in my heart. I watched it out of interest. Well, I can't remember how I got into it. I just happened to be flicking and sat down and watched it. And then it became, whenever it's on, I must watch it. But the thing that cemented it in my heart is one episode, Penny has to sleep over. So she's sleeping on the couch.
Yep.
There is a particular part of the couch that Sheldon sits down because it's a correct distance away from the TV, it's near the heater or the open window, so it gets the heat and the breeze from both.
Yep.
And she is sleeping in his spot. And the actual line is, it's 6:30 a.m, I have my milk, I have my Wheatos, how can I sit down now and watch Doctor Who?
Yes, first season.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going, but that's my favourite British show. This is an American show.
Why is it on at 6:30 in the morning?
PBS. You know? Yeah. I think that is the bit that said, yes, I enjoy this show.
Sheldon's obsessed with Star Trek.
The Flash, it seems to be his big thing. He's always wearing the Flash t-shirts.
The Flash keeps popping up every now and again. Yes.
Yeah. But he has weird dreams about... apparently there's one where Leonard Nimoy's in it, where Penny buys Leonard and Sheldon a transporter model in box, perfect, and gives it to them as a present.
Okay, yeah, Star Trek transporter.
Once they get there, she says, why are you going to play with it? And Sheldon has a fit about the idea of opening it. When he falls asleep, he has a dream, and in a dream, he ends up at Leonard Nimoy's house with Leonard Nimoy, and Leonard Nimoy won't open his version of the toy, but opens Sheldon's and then breaks it.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Right.
It's popular among physicists. I know us being grunts don't recognise it, but quite a few physicists have appeared in the show, either as someone to talk to or part of the background.
Yeah.
And so far, to my knowledge, we've had the eponymous Will Wheaton.
He's in it a lot.
We've had Brent Spiner in it.
Yes.
And we've also had...
George
Takei has been in it. So has Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. Uh-huh. And we have had Levi Burton.
And the cartoon, the guy that created Spider-Man, etc.
Stan Lee.
Mm. Yes, Sheldon gets a restraining order from Stan Lee, so it can go next to his restraining order from Leonard Nimoy.
Mm. It seems to be doing very well from ratings, so I can see why they're getting people in like that.
Well, they're filming their 5th season over in America, even as we record this.
It does its homework. It does its homework from the physicist point of view, and it although it's made them as kind of like dorks, it hasn't made, it's not the dumb physicists, of stuff, and it's not demeaning. You know, these guys would have been like this whether they were physicists or whether they were, you know, shop workers or whoever. Yeah.
They're smart, socially inept.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I recognise people, not just people in this room, people I've talked to, people I'm friends with, people I hate. I recognise them in this show.
Yeah.
There was one bit where two of them were going out and with their girlfriends, and Sheldon wants them to say, no, we're going out with our girlfriends. And he stops and said, just think, I've just said that, we're going out with girlfriends. Real human girlfriends, not ones we've made up.
Yeah.
And then he stops us, but probably the only ones we'll ever get.
Yeah.
So will you make it past season one, do you think?
I don't know. A lot of people were obviously both raving about it, but I didn't quite get into it that much. It had its moments. I laughed out loud a few times in those 17 episodes, but only a few.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that Sheldon is very much a knockoff Niles Crane. The way he acts is very Niles Crane.
To a certain extent, yes. I will concede there. As I can't remember the name for it, but Fake Keith has mentioned that he displays all the attributes of a certain type of autism.
No,
I can't remember. I can't remember the name of it. She did tell me, but he's a classic case.
Yeah, well, in many people in that profession probably really do have.
Yeah, yeah,
but yeah,
the high functioning.
Yes, yeah. It does seem the way he acts is it just reminds so much of Niles Crane.
Yeah.
I have to say, I much prefer Frasier to this.
I can see where you're coming from.
It just keeps reminding me of it, and I keep thinking, oh, I'd rather be watching Frasier, frankly.
Well, like I said, I think it. What has attracted me to it is the geek credentials.
Yeah.
It doesn't play down the geek credentials. It embraces its geek credentials. And it's the fact that I can recognise a lot of people.
I've not seen season one. I'm only coming to it
maybe
as it's in the last sort of like year or couple of years. So I've seen some old episodes as they're shown. So maybe as the characters have built and developed, I've enjoyed it more.
Like I said, they are currently filming the fifth season at the moment.
Yeah.
So. But it is so one where there are throwaway comments and that kind of stuff that are very fanboy. And have you freeze-framed any of the closing bits?
A good few of them, not all of them.
At the very end, the guy that writes it does a little bit...
After the credits.
Before the ident for the...
Vanity card.
Yeah. Yeah, vanity. And some of them are brilliant. There's one not so long ago about how he was going to go and kill someone.
No, really?
Like, what?
Yeah, that was probably because it's the same people who make this... are the people who make Two and a Half Men, write and make Two and a Half Men. So one wonders if that was a bleed-off from...
I think it is, because it starts at number 180 or so.
Yeah,
because something hasn't happened, someone hasn't signed a contract, and he's just lost, and he's sort of like, if I ever get my hands on this person, it's...
Yeah. No names are mentioned, but I think that's a bleed-off from the Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, it does seem to jump numbers, so I assume they have one in Two and a Half Men and then one in this, and so numbers aren't consecutive in the particular series. But
no, I enjoy it. I wouldn't necessarily want to sit there and watch it back-to-back for hours on end, but when it's on,
that could have been a problem.
When they show it, they usually do it two episodes back-to-back, and they do sometimes follow on from each other.
They are quite short, only about
20
minutes.
Yeah.
I'll happily watch it. I find it quite good. I've got to admit,
when they're showing it on Channel 4, E4 over here, and whenever it's on, I will hit the reminder, or I will stop and make a point of watching this.
But no, I'd recommend it for watch.
Has the Dunn seal of approval.
I'm undecided.
Try a few more, but not en masse.
Yeah. It all started with the Big Bang. It all
started with the Big Bang. Right, you lovely chap and chapettes, you've been writing to us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
If they want to write to us again...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, you just there. Yeah, thank that.
Do you mind?
So I'm saying thank you to...
Do you mind? If people wish to write to us again, though, we really kind of need to let them know where to write to.
Okay, we can do.
So, if you wish to send us any of your thoughts, your letters, your things in five words...
Mm-hmm.
Abuse.
No, not the abuse.
No, I can do that.
I get enough of that.
You can email us at show...
at... staggering...
stories...
dot...
net. Woo!
Though you don't have to include the Wahoo.
No, that wouldn't work.
No.
Right, who's going first?
I have here a couple of letters.
A couple?
You're being greedy. Actually, two.
Well, yes.
Hello.
Hello.
Will here.
Hello, Will.
I've heard that a new syndrome of audio feedback death I now call Wind Will Syndrome. Thank you. Fake Keith.
What?
I have no idea.
I liked your last podcast a lot. I really have got into Dirk Gently after I saw the first episode.
Oh, good.
But have not seen the third episode yet.
Yeah. Probably the best one.
My dad's walking into the room. He's taking my laptop. And, oh, he's going to send you some feedback.
Oh, hello, dad. Will's dad.
We're about to get in trouble, are we?
Dear Staggering Stories, my son, Will, 12, sent you in feedback. You advised him to ask me about the naughty words you use. I don't know what they were, so I asked Will's 8-year-old brother, Luke.
Right.
He knew.
Oh.
When he told me what they meant, I was horrified. And so I have taken your advice and promptly grounded the three of us.
Oh, good, good.
It's boring. Oh. Seriously love the podcast and banter. Cheers, Gareth.
Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you, Gareth. Sorry about that.
And Will.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. It's hereditary in that family, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Must be.
Couple of generations there gone down the tubes.
Oh, well.
Well, I have a missive.
Do you?
From Nancy, from the Happiness Patrol. Oh,
hello, Nancy.
A bit tardy, but nonetheless.
It's all right.
On the subject of Galley 24.
Oh, yes.
So pleased to hear that El Presidente keeps both real and fake, and my secret boyfriend, the head of Perth, something we need to know,
will we've got to discuss.
Returning. I might be coming.
Yes,
I might be coming.
Yes, we hope.
Oh, yes, you know, I have a ticket.
Yes, I have a ticket. I just need to get the airfare.
Yeah. Get the cash together.
Fear not for lack of cider, for I will once again be driving the RAV4 of Rassilon down from San Francisco and can easily stock up the Trader Joe's on... Superlvade, which I'm assuming is a kind of cider they have over there then.
I love you. I just want you to know I love you truly, deeply and eternally.
Newton's Folly, our house brand, which sounds very, very interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being that Newton worked on the theory of gravity and that things that must go up fall down and if you're drunk enough of the cider, you fall down.
Yeah. But perhaps that's the true meaning of the Apple store.
It might be.
Probably.
They're not exactly Strongbow or Magnus, but they're pretty good.
Oh, that's okay.
Looking forward to geeking out with you lovely folks once again.
Thank you.
Yeah, look forward to it.
I also have a thing in five words.
Oh, right, no. Yes.
Okay, go on.
We're ready. I'm primed.
She hasn't actually given me the answer, so I don't know.
Oh,
person.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Smarmy schoolboy to angry Targaryen.
Okay, think of Turlough.
Yeah.
What was his race?
Yes, Targaryen, I think it was.
Okay.
We've come up with Turlough.
We're going for Turlough.
Nancy, yes. Let us know if we're right.
I'm sure everybody else out there already knows.
But thank you. Thank you for the cider. It's my duty now to go forth to Gallifrey and seek you out.
And drink your cider.
Yep.
Right.
El Presidente.
El Prezi, El Prezi, El Prezi, El Prezi.
We have one here.
El Presidente!
From Mr. M.
Oh, Mr. M, long time no here.
Yeah, hello.
He's been having a real life, hasn't he?
I think he has, yes.
I'm not so sure if you read this.
All right.
Hello, teams.
Teams?
Yeah, teams.
Teams, yes.
Multiple recipients this one.
Oh.
So, it's time for the Mr. M Podcast Awards.
Oh, no.
Drum roll.
Before we begin, I just have to say thank you to everybody who voted.
I voted.
Completely overwhelmed with a response, so thank you.
And I didn't vote for myself.
Oh, that's good.
No, nor did I. Section one, the podcasts. Best female podcaster? The nominees are... A Fake Keith.
Whee!
Alicia Pearson.
Whee!
Vicky Walters.
Whee!
And Gene Riddler. And the winner is...
Fake Keith.
Open up the envelope here.
Hang on.
It is Fake Keith.
Yay!
Who's not here tonight to accept the award.
Do you want to accept the award?
I voted for Fake Keith and I'll accept the award on behalf of Fake Keith. Thank you so much.
I think I didn't. I made sure I didn't vote for anybody on the Selling Me Stories.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
But anyway, Best Male Podcaster.
Ooh.
Nominees are Adam J. Purcell.
Yay!
A Real Keith.
Yay!
Thank you.
Ben Shoveler.
Yay!
And Dave Keep.
Yay!
Ooh.
And the winner is... Dave Keep.
Yay! Why aren't we having him on this podcast then, if he's that good?
I don't know.
I think you've got to get out there and kidnap him.
Yeah, he's only up the road, we could do.
Okay.
Best Podcast Presenter.
Ooh.
And the three nominees are Siobhan Galichon.
Galichon!
Adam Pearson.
Ooh.
And Reese Parton.
Yay!
Reese.
And the winner is...
Reese.
Siobhan Galishan.
Oh, well.
And the Mr. M Award for Best New Podcast.
Oh, yes.
We can't win this one now.
I don't think so.
No.
Unless we change our name.
Nearly 5 years old now. This is the award for the best new podcast that's been up in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
I bet one of them's got Reese in it.
I bet it has.
There is no nominees as such. I think you just have to nominate.
All right, yes, yes.
And the winner is... The DWO Torchcast.
Oh. Ooh. Do we have their science address?
We will certainly put it up in the show notes.
We'll put it up in the show notes.
The best podcast award will be at the end of the email, apparently.
Oh.
Section 2, The Show.
Ooh.
As in Doctor Who.
Ah.
Best companion of Series 6.
Well, I've got two to choose from, so...
Arguably three, I don't know. The award goes to... Rory Williams.
Oh. Yay!
I didn't vote for Rory.
I did.
I wonder why. On both of your cases.
And the Best Guest Actress Award goes to... Cerianne Jones. Yeah. Idris. Yep.
Yes, yes. I think that's all I voted for.
I'm not sure I voted for that. It may have been. Best Guest Actor. Mm. The award goes to... Mark Shepherd.
Yep.
For Canton Everett, Delaware III.
Oh, yes. Definitely, yes.
And there's a quick fire thing here. The Most Wanted Return Award goes to Madame Vastra.
Yep.
The Best Writer goes to Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
The Best Villain, Madame Kavorian.
Mm-hmm.
Best Monster, The Silence.
Yeah.
Yes.
Best Series 6 Episode.
Ooh.
The Girl Who Waited.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know.
Best Sarah Jane Adventures Series 5 Episode. It's a bit of a shoo-in, I think, really. The Curse of Clyde Langer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I think was the best.
That's a good one.
Best Tortured Miracle Day episode.
Ooh. Is there one?
Episode 4, Escape to LA.
Yeah.
If you can remember which one was in particular. Section 3, the best ever section. The best ever series of Sarah Jane Adventures. Series 4.
Mm-hmm.
Best ever companion.
Ooh.
Amy Pond.
Mmm.
Which I think I have to agree with.
That's only because she's the most recent one.
Yeah.
The best ever doctor.
Ooh, whichever one I happen to be watching at the time.
Matt Smith. Now.
I'm channeling my inner vampire.
Now for the Mr. M Award for Outstanding Contribution to Podcasting.
Ooh.
Ooh.
This is a special award given by Mr. M himself.
Well,
for the best of the best in the podcast world. This year's award goes to... Reese Parton.
Yay! Hey,
well done.
Deserves it.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a man who's always on a podcast for us every single day of the week.
Yeah.
If someone tried to listen to all of Reese's podcasts he does per week, they wouldn't have time for sleep.
Yes.
So he does it himself. It's beyond us mere mortals' knowledge. So here is the reward for keeping him going.
He has a time machine. That's how
I
he does it.
I think it's the only way you can do it. It nips backwards a couple of months.
Must be, yeah.
Yeah.
It's standing in your head all the time. It just keeps you awake.
Unless he's on autopilot, so he actually turns a recorder on and does them in his sleep.
That could explain some of the rambling. That could explain some of the rambling.
And now the big one. Best Podcast Award. With a total of, wait for it, 60 votes going in this category alone.
Ooh.
There was just one vote in it in the end.
Ooh.
The nominees were Staggering Stories, The Flashing Blade, The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, and the DWO WhoCast.
I wouldn't like to call that one.
No.
I can. Build the tension. Reveal. More tension. That. A little bit more tension. The winner...
Just reach across and smack him.
...is Staggering Stories.
Yay! Thank you. Who was the 1 point with?
I didn't say, I think. No.
I am,
thank you for voting
humbled.
For us.
Yes,
yeah. Thank you. Yes, there's a lot of very good ones, aren't there?
There is. Mm. It's like I said, the competition is very high. Not that we're in competition with each other.
Not
but,
really, no.
Yeah, thank you. My gob has been well and truly smacked.
He goes on to say, yes, for second year running, El Presidente and his mighty minions have done it again. Congratulations. So, that's the awards over for another year. A huge thank you to all voters.
Thank
and just
you.
A further note of congratulations to Fake Keith from Staggering Stories, whose name was pulled from the metaphorical hat this morning. She has become the winner of Doctor Who, the Time Traveller's Almanac.
Ooh.
Ah. Mr. M will return in a few weeks' time with some stats and facts about the awards. Ah, maybe we'll find out then.
Yes.
And then Mr. M will be taking a short break for real life and stuff.
Aww.
However, in the meantime, keep listening to all those wonderful podcasts.
Yes. Please do.
Here are the awards, a.k.a. Mr. M.
Thank you, Mr. M.
And I'm sure Fake Keith will thank you from her sickbed.
Yeah, her deathbed. Maybe rather squidgy and sniffy, daggy-berry Dutch.
It was when I went in and saw her, and she said, unclean, go away, and looked at me from underneath. She looked like one of those kind of Doctor Who monsters from the 70s. It was a duvet with eyes.
She has made a nest.
There was a hand that sneaked out, grabbed the remote control and came back, and his pair of eyes that sort of like looked from under duvet and this strange gurgly noise went, aha.
Scaly Dalek hand
That's it.
Not a well bunny. Not a well Even bunny if people all. Sing Warm Kitty.
I tried.
Warm Kitty.
Yeah, I tried. I got glared at.
What's the song?
Warm Kitty, Soft Kitty, Little Ball of Fur. Oh, there's another line. Something Kitty. Something Kitty.
Purr, purr, purr. Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Though
okay.
Naya has done Dalek.
What, Warm Dalek?
No. Hard Dalek, Metal Dalek, Little Ball of Hate. Tough Dalek, Screeching Dalek, Exterminate.
Naya, you have far too much time in your hands and a wonderful imagination. As we've said, all hail the great Ted of Pertwee.
Good grief, yes.
We have ignored the other ensemble. They are still here.
They're looking rather peeved.
Well, Graham's turned his back on us completely.
I know. He's disgusted. Mm. He's disgusted.
Hello, plastic
minions.
Cardboard Grunhilda. Which will be replaced, you do realise this soon.
Well, I'm not sure. We only got Grunhilda because of an obsession. It depends whether an obsession is developed upon...
We'll have to see how fickle our president
we will. Time will tell.
Yes,
not we off yet.
First season, we won't, but it's after that, you know, after... It'll be the comments during the first season.
Well, with Gillen, it was before, really.
Yeah, I do.
It was the photographs of her in the police officer's outfit with legs up to her armpits.
That and the Kevin Bishop show. She's very good in that.
Yes.
Lots of skimpy outfits, too. Anyway.
At the moment, she's in the Titanic, and you can't get to wear a lot of skimpy outfits in the Titanic.
No. The assistant that is not Karen.
Yeah. It has to be said, I put up with the Kevin Bishop show, which is pretty poor, apart from Karen Gillan stuff, but I haven't been able to put up with Titanic.
Yeah.
So whether that's a sign, I don't know.
This is a ITV four-part TV series, not the movie.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Anyway, we have a thing in five words here from Brian Hunt.
Okay, Brian, lay it on us.
Tom Baker's angry holographic face.
I think I know this one.
The face of evil?
That's what I was thinking. Face of evil.
Yeah. Do you have a name for it?
Zoannon?
Yes,
I am sad. Oh, dear.
You win nothing. Right, you have a bit here from Sandro.
Hello, Sandro.
Hi, guys. I've been working on this song for ages. And this is the final product. Hope you all enjoy it. Please share it with friends. Feedback is appreciated. Bow ties are cool. Sandro JF. P.S. Please play us on your show.
Okay.
So here we go, then.
Okay.
Here's Sandro's song. Great beat already.
What's up, yo? You know who I be. Thank ya. They know who I be. Time to tell you a story about time travel. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So let's beware of sobbing mango dang fried. The man she leaves, walking down the street like a yeezy bean, yeah. The silence will go, he's dead. Oh no, leaping angels can't even go. They stuck a time block, so it's time to go, yo. And then you hear whooshin'.
What?
And then you hear whooshin'. You hear whooshin'.
So, that's just a taster for you.
Yeah, we'll put the rest of it on the end. It's about 3 minutes long.
So we're going to put a link for you on the... Or we'll put it at the end of this podcast.
Put it on the end,
I think he enjoyed himself.
Yeah, good
and
stuff.
I want to know, is that his dad being collared into it? Thank you. And do we have any more feedback?
I believe we do.
Ooh.
Okay, we have another bit of audio feedback here. It is from Sandro again, this time with Rhys.
Oh, hello, Sandro and Rhys.
Hello, Staggering Stories team. It's me, Rhys, but I'm not alone. I've actually got Sandro JF on audio form.
Ooh.
Oh! Hello.
Again. You did send in audio feedback and before, JF. Didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes, I played LMFAO at the end of my thing. That got them
excited?
Oh, yes. I thought I was breaking a record there, but you've already sent it in. Never mind.
Good try.
So this is quite interesting because we were just chatting on Skype and then we decided to record this for you. So forgive us if we kind of ramble a bit.
It's a weird
Yes.
Ramble?
Yes, definitely.
Mind you, there wouldn't be much different compared to if I record with Patrick in that case. We do ramble too.
5 years of rambling.
I wasn't into that.
Clever man. So even though the episodes are about 6 months away, there's a trailer for Doctor Who. Nice. And it's very exciting.
The robot cowboy guy.
I've actually seen a few complaints online that he looked a bit like a Borg, but then I just have to say, well, Cybermen were around in 1960-something.
Yeah.
The Borg came around long after that.
Mm. Oh, is he supposed to be a Cyberman?
I don't know, but I've seen people comparing him to a Borg. Because he looks kind of half human, half robot, but who cares?
Yeah. True. But, there's this comic out, and there is a character that looks just like that in it. I don't read it, I've just seen it on the shelves. It looks just like him. So,
interesting.
It's a Batman comic, so I don't know what's with that.
So, this actually must be the Toby Whithouse episode that was filmed in Spain.
Yes.
Yeah, probably. I think so. Yeah.
Also, no spoilers for anyone, but there's a man in there who's made up to look fairly old and fairly like similar to another character that we may have seen.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yes.
Now he's being vague. He's giving away spoilers.
I think that must be a huge bit of misdirection, honestly.
Probably. What did you think about that scene that kind of looks like it's filmed inside a pyramid or something?
Just lucky he's not going la 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 la
with the Pharaoh.
That looks interesting. Yes. I've seen a couple of pictures of people in costume that must be in the same story. And are those robots in the trailer in the pyramid, do you think?
I think that's what Moffat's trying to get at. You know, trying to make you think that is what it is. Probably a completely different episode, but it could be. It could be the same. Moffat lies.
A lot. He does. Yes. Because the Ponds aren't going to... never mind. It's all very interesting, and it's quite interesting that it features something that is written on the majority by someone else.
Yeah.
Moffat, you know. Also, that got me thinking, who would you like to be the next executive producer?
You didn't take your fingers off. Who would you like to be the next executive producer?
Probably Toby Whithouse. I think he'd do a pretty good job.
Mind you, I've always thought Mike Gatiss would do a good job too. No, Gatiss.
Yeah.
It's Gatiss.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good bit. He's kind of also with Moffat too, isn't he? You know, they're kind of both
sharing ideas and stuff. Done,
yeah. Or maybe that's Sherlock. Or maybe it's both. Who knows? Moffat lies.
A bit of both, maybe. He does.
Yes.
Maybe someone...
Mind you, it's a bit like The Doctor. There'd be a lot of actors out there who would make a good Doctor, but...
With being human.
Then again, maybe a bad one. And so, same with the writers, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of being good or bad, maybe we should discuss what we think Jenna Louise Coleman will be like as a companion. Ooh. I know I kind of did this with Patrick. Mm. Be quiet, Adam. I know I kind of discussed that with Patrick, but what do you think?
I think, what's her name? I've forgotten it already.
Jenna Louise Coleman.
Yes, that's it. Will do, a pretty good job. I think she can act reasonably well.
Is she the first double barrel?
The other shows that she's been in. And,
have you seen other shows he's been in?
No, but well, she was in the Captain America movie, and I saw that. And I just saw it again a couple of days ago, and yeah, she acts pretty well in that. I don't remember her character's name, but she definitely
was. It a not big help. Part, so to speak? Again, be quiet, Adam.
I don't think so. It was more of a cameo than a proper part.
Okay. Was there anything that might have stretched her as an actor?
A couple of lines. That's all I'm going to say. Just a couple of lines, because, you know, spoilers and stuff.
All right, then. So I'll have to go and watch it.
Yeah, it's a good movie, anyway.
He's
really
speaking
good.
About spoilers.
I was actually really surprised when I heard she was in something
film that's been released,
that big
then went,
and then coming to Doctor Who. And then I realised, hang on a second, they had big previews in New York of Doctor Who. This is pretty big.
Yeah.
Also, something exciting for me, I'm actually watching the trailer as we're recording. Mm. Well, I've got it playing in the background with the volume down. Yeah. Is Ben Browder in Doctor Who?
Hmm.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Who does he play again? I know the name, but I forgot what the character's name is.
I've forgotten the character's name too, but I'm just fascinated of how you can make him look old just by putting a bit of a moustache on his face. He looks a lot older than he actually is.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, he does, yeah.
Anyway, that's a tangent.
I'm good at those.
Can El Presidente take
so am I. And he would have to cut out of my podcast. Speaking of podcasts...
Yes. Okay, you're fine. Good.
You host one, don't you?
I host one, yes. Podcast. Voyages in the TARDIS.
Oh, yes, yes.
Plug.
Which you can find at...
TARDISvoyages.webs.com. Webs with an
S. That's a full plug.
Yeah, that's a full plug. And I also have another one, but I don't exactly host it. I more remix songs and upload them up there.
Who?
Mega Mix.
I did hear about that on one of your Travellers in the TARDIS... Travellers? Travels in the TARDIS.
Voyages in the TARDIS.
Voyages. Close enough. Mm. Travels, voyages, meanderings through the TARDIS.
Yes.
Yes. And something we've discussed tonight before we started recording is that there will be a new podcast out there.
Oh, yes.
The fifth one that I will be involved in. Oh, is that called again?
An improbable podcast.
I keep going to say impossible, but I'm probably just thinking of the impossible astronaut.
Yes. Yeah. The name came up from Hitchhiker's Guide, so...
Yeah.
Yes, so that could be found at the website for that is...
improbablewebsite.webs.com. The current version up there is not the proper version. It's like a... It's very temporary.
Fair enough. But basically, I'm pretty excited about this, actually. We're going to be talking about many different sci-fi shows, aren't we?
Yes, Doctor Who, Sherlock.
Sherlock. Which isn't sci-fi, but
no, still.
Yeah, and movies as well.
Advertising space. We should be charging them for this.
Anything that's entertainment, basically.
Make a mint.
And that's going to be hosted with me.
Me.
And two other people. We got yourself, Bean...
Me.
Myself, being Sandra JF, and one of my friends, Josh G, who I literally just came back from his house 2 hours ago.
Blimey.
And another friend, Lauren Burridge, who is kind of very talkative, so that's going to be fun.
Kind of very.
Very talkative.
Well, that's good for a podcast. You don't want somebody who's quiet, really.
No, you don't.
Silence.
So, after that rather waffly feedback, which is quite normal for me...
not for me. Actually.
No, not really.
My email's very short, mostly.
Careful, by the time El Presidente is finished with it, it may have been edited.
Record. I can waffle on.
Yeah, just plonk it in.
So, after all of this quite fun feedback...
Oh, yes, very
I'll leave you to your show.
Ah, yes.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Yes.
Bye.
Goodbye.
I missed over half of that because my thing's weird.
Yes.
But,
yes, can you remember if you're going to give away the game, even if you're going to just discuss the trailers, El Presidente needs enough notice to either A, leave the room, or B, stick his fingers in his ears.
We need...
Spoiler music.
Yeah. Sha-la-la-la-la. Just out of interest, I have just looked up General Louise Coleman.
Oh, yes.
From First Avenger.
Captain America, I was looking at dirty photos.
And she played Connie.
Which narrows it down to...
I don't know.
Oh, isn't she the girlfriend of Captain America?
Is there an image of her?
Captain America?
Hang on, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think there's an image. There's the image of the actress, but not an image of the character.
Oh, okay.
There's a lot being made as to why there isn't this big launch for and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, you have still got... Amy Pond and Rory in the series.
Yeah,
until
Christmas.
Until Christmas. So
I can understand why they've announced that she's going to be the new assistant, but they're not announcing that much about her because, they know they're going, but it kind of is a bit, you're our old assistants, we love you, but here's our new toy, It does kind of smack. I mean, they used to announce who the assistants were, but you didn't find out a lot about them until they aired.
Last time, just finished reading the Elizabeth Sladen autobiography, she was trundled out for a photo shoot roughly in the middle of Katie Manning's last season. It was probably Planet of the Daleks, around about there.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah, before the episode where she left had been aired.
Yeah.
But you don't really get to, and I don't think so far they've done too much. It's like even with Donna.
Yeah.
The actress's name's gone out of my head.
Catherine Tate.
Although there was
God, our brains are leaking out
about it. Yeah. Short-term memory, it's always the something to go. But yeah, I mean, she was very well-known comedian in her own right. But even then, it was like, Catherine Tate's to play the new Doctor assistant, woohoo. And that was it. There wasn't a big follow-up on it while you still had the last assistant going.
Freema, yes.
Freema Agama.
Agama, yes. Well, we'll see. Okay, one final bit of audio feedback here.
Woohoo!
From Naya!
From Naya.
Yay!
Nobody can tell the join.
No.
Shh.
I'm knitting, Naya.
She's knitting.
Hello, Staggering Stories team.
Hello, Naya.
I have a confession to make.
Ooh.
One of the reasons why I'm leaving audio feedback all the time, when I know it's not as polished as my printed feedback is not necessarily to make your lives easier, guys.
It does.
It's because if I can consistently get through audio feedback without repeating myself, which obviously I haven't reached yet, without waffling deviation. Off, without saying or without awkward pauses, then I'm considering doing my own podcast.
Oh.
It wouldn't be Doctor Who. It would probably be general audio, SF audio, reading, and science fiction, and mysteries. Sounds good. Until I reach that happy day, you have to listen to me flail.
So we
on
do,
the
we
other hand, I get to listen to you, and that's a fabulous thing.
Aww.
So first bit of feedback, please, more tea dueling. That was the funniest thing ever. It didn't matter that we couldn't see it. It was hilarious to listening to you talk.
I enjoyed it.
In fact, I suggest that you have a tea duel off at the 5-year anniversary if you can have it.
I'm going to try.
Yeah.
There should be the first Staggering Stories Tea Dueling Championships.
Yeah.
Speaking of that 5-year anniversary, I'm sorry. As much as I'd love to see that blanket in progress, Fake Keith, I really can't come over there.
Aww.
Not for this time. I should say not at this time.
Uh-huh.
I'm hoping to come around Christmas because something else America's missing... Panto. Panto.
Oh,
I love Panto.
Oh, yes, there is.
So if I can't come at the Christmas, New Year's time frame, hopefully we can meet up in Galley, or hopefully meet up in Chicago TARDIS.
You're hoping to.
I know that, Gene, you said that you weren't that interested in, quote, the November one, unquote. But Chicago TARDIS is a really good con. I think you should try it before you decide that it's not as interesting as Galley.
Mm.
It's admittedly not as big as Galley. And it's on a more difficult time to travel.
Yeah.
Because expensive. Thanksgiving is a secular holiday, so more people in America actually travel to their friends, to their families, wherever, on Thanksgiving than they do for Christmas.
Didn't know
on
that.
The other hand, if you do go, it's slightly more relaxed. The lobby con is, in my opinion, better because the lobby's a better one to group in.
Yeah.
There is a mall right there, which gives a much broader range of food choices than the hotel restaurant, the
you
other
leave
hotel
the Twinkies
restaurant,
alone.
The hotel restaurant down the street, or Denny's.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's run by a really good set of people. They know what they're doing. They've been doing conventions under various names for a very long time. They know how to deliver a very good con. So, please, think about it. Certainly, I know you're hoping to make it there, and I'm hoping to make it to both cons. So, while we're hoping, you're hoping I see you at least twice in 2013.
Yes, definitely.
Let's see what else. On the feedback, arguably, Fake Keith, you were right about Andre being in the West Country, because from your point of view, stateside is really, 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 really west of you.
Yeah, yes.
The other thing, getting back to my feedback about audio on the radio and it being a pity because we invented it, it's a huge pity. It's just heartbreaking. But it's not just radio drama. First of all, we have nothing like BBC. We only have PBS, which a lot of people in our government are trying to cut off. So we don't have a consistent vox populi like the BBC is. And in fact, the joke is the PBS stands for primarily British stuff, because in the state where I live, they are still rerunning Are You Being Served and To the Men Are Born and Waiting for God.
Sounds like UK gold.
Yeah, pretty much.
But a quick bit of... Obviously, I have not yet reached the great height of being able to give audio extemporaneously without sounding like a dork. Sorry, folks.
It's okay.
Anyway, on audiobooks in general and audio, while podcasts are all over America, there's something that Neil Gaiman said at the National Book Festival a few years ago.
Is it repeatable?
Where he was saying that in the pre-pod iPod days, not only were there no radio dramas, or very, very few. Mm-hmm. As I said, I only know of one company that's still doing original work. The audiobooks themselves were dying.
Mm-hmm.
He could not sell audios of his books. Nobody wanted to carry them. Nobody wanted to pay to have them recorded. People who did audiobooks were getting out of the business.
Yeah.
And what brought them back, and of course what invented the podcast, was the invention of the iPod.
Yeah.
And I have to say that in this post-iPod, post-modern world, the last Terry Pratchett book I didn't so much read or listen to as consume. I'm very busy. I have very few times that I can sit and read. But I have a fair number of times when I can sit and listen.
On the other
hand, there are places when you cannot have an iPod, when it would be rude or inappropriate to have headphones. And so the book Snuff, as I said, I kind of consumed. I would listen to the audio version in the car until I got to work. I would read about a chapter over lunch in the printed version of the book. Mm-hmm. When I got out, I would fast forward to where I left off in the book and listen on the way home. And
just the way of doing it.
To this day, I have never fully read it or fully listened to it, but I ping-ponged back and forth until I was able to hear the whole story. And that, to some degree, may be the future of storytelling, at least for people who can afford to buy two copies. Anyway, I have waffled on.
Always a pleasure.
It's always good to hear you. I'm so glad that the invention of the iPod meant the invention of your podcast. And even if I can't see you in person for the 5-year anniversary, I'll hear you again in 2 weeks.
Thank you. Thank you.
She went into an accent then. Did you hear it?
Yes.
Yeah. She nearly said y'all.
Yes, it was just borderline. No, but I think she's got a point in maybe not the invention of the iPod, but it's the dissemination of the MP3s and the technology that went round it.
Oh, yeah, so the iPod was not the first MP3 player by a long shot.
No, it made it popular, certainly.
Yeah.
It brought it down to the masses, and I think it was the ability to home record, basically what we're doing here, editing and recording at home.
Yeah, been able to do that for a very long time.
Yeah, but it's now become popular. As for the book front, I was reading recently that although hardback books, the sales are still steady, softbacks have been dropped by about 2 million, about 2 million.
Yeah.
It was something like 14 million last year. It's down to about 11 million.
Yeah, I remember an article a year or two back, saying Amazon now sold more e-books than hardbacks
on
the first initial print
of the book. The article I was reading is hardbacks has remained steady, while softbacks is the one that's falling off.
Mm.
But anyway.
Yeah. Is that it?
I think so. I don't know. You're the master of ceremonies.
I'm calling it.
Is that enough anymore?
I think that is it.
Shame.
I think that's it.
So, as the evening sun still shines...
It draws in, yes.
Just about.
Yes, it's daylight out there. Yes. I won't be driving home at midnight.
Yeah. Bank holiday Monday.
Yes. As the sun sets over Staggering Stories podcast 130, chocolate wrappers float in the wind. Easter egg carcasses fill the bins.
Yeah.
Chocolate smeared round the mouth.
Yes.
And elsewhere.
Thank you. I had a walnut whip.
We wend our wearisome way to the west, and it's me, Jean, saying au revoir.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 130, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Gene Riddler, and Keith Dunn. The views expressed here are those of the speaker, and don't necessarily represent those of the speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this podcast is an El Presidente production of www.staggeringstories.net.
Oh, it's been a long time, isn't it?
Don't
you forget how good it is when you haven't had them that often. Torchwood is making it into the consciousness in America a bit more as well.
Oh,
I
really?
Watch a series, Murdoch Mysteries.
Yeah,
it's a Victorian whodunit.
Yeah,
and they just had one, The Annoying Red Planet. And at the end of The Annoying Red Planet, the Murdoch, the sergeant, the doctor, and the constable wandering off, and they're talking about where would you set up a site to look at aliens and explore. Right. And one of them, yeah, I'll sit here, and Murdoch suggests New Mexico.
Right.
Area 51.
And as they're going out, the inspector who's in charge of them all says, no, Cardiff in Wales, no one would ever think to look there.
Right.
He's off.
It's picked up on his other microphone.
She's doing naughty stuff.
Hey. Quick, he's coming back.
Oh, zip. Hello.
Hello.
What's up, y'all? You know who I be. Thank ya. Men know who I be. Time to tell you a story about time travel. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah. So just beware of sobbing mango dangle fry. The man shall ease, walking down the street like he is a bean, yeah. The silence will go, he's dead. Oh no, weeping angels can't even throw. They stuck a time block, so it's time to go, yo. And then you hear whooshing.
What?
And then you hear whooshing.
Nah.
And then you hear whooshing.
Nah.
He's here,
raw.
And then you hear whooshing.
What?
And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah.
And then you hear whooshing.
Oh yeah, that means he's here.
And then comes the box. And he appears. All the silly monsters staring at me. We got a screwdriver in his hands, and he ain't afraid to buzz it, buzz it, buzz it, buzz it. It's the Doctor and the TARDIS. The Doctor and the TARDIS. I'm a cartoon. Yeah. No sunshine, they really just can't fight him off. And all the moon, they just really good bunny poo. That's how we go, scary monsters are strange world. Go to Earth, fix a crash, picks up baby, she's really fast, yeah. And then you hear Russian, you hear Russian, yeah. Then you hear Russian,
he's here.
And then you hear Russian, yeah, you hear Russian, uh-huh, you hear Russian.
He's here, here.
And then comes the fox, and he appears. All those silly monsters are staring at me. We got a screwdriver in his pants, and he ain't afraid to buzz it, to buzz it, to buzz it, to buzz it. To buzz it. It's the Doctor in the TARDIS. Yeah. The Doctor in the TARDIS. Buddy, 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 yeah. Buddy, 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 yeah. Buddy, 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 yeah, yeah. He's a fuzzy man. He'd be the fuzzy man. Yeah. Cause it's the Doctor and the TARDIS. Oh! Yeah! Ooh! Yeah. And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah.
And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah.
And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah, he's here, here.
And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah.
And then you hear whooshing.
Yeah.
And then you hear whooshing.
That means he's here, here, here.
Doctor in the TARDIS.